Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And our goal is always to help you accelerate the operational priorities and projects that you're working on, but also give you some insights that you can use for your own professional development. And today I've got a guest that's from a company that we currently work with called IPEX. And so I want to do a proper introduction. William L. Khoury is our guest today. He joined IPEX in 2023 and is currently leading the Manufacturing Excellence Department in North America. In his role, he oversees operation standards and disciplined execution to improve safety, service, and productivity. William has more than 25 years of experience in end-to-end supply chain, including manufacturing, warehousing, transportation, and distribution. William led transformation in different organizations in both corporate roles and operations roles, establishing team methodologies and increasing team collaboration and effectiveness. He is passionate about building diverse and high-performing teams that deliver on decisions and actions. William has a Bachelor of Mechanical Engineering degree and holds two master's degrees, one in industrial engineering and the other in engineering management. He is fluent in English, French, and Arabic. In his free time, he enjoys spending time with his wife and 12-year-old daughter and likes sailing, cycling, and skiing. Welcome to the podcast, William.
Thank you, Greg, and thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, no, we're glad to have you. I know that I was very impressed with you and our interactions, and I know that at IPEX, you're really working on introducing best practices to operational excellence. And what I'd like to start with is looking back on your career, there's usually for most people this aha moment that occurs when you shifted from not sure if you knew what you were doing to like feeling like I got something here, I know what I'm doing. And I'm wondering, when you think back on that, what's one of the successes that comes to mind?
So I'm not sure if there's a single aha moment. There's probably a stream of them, Greg. But I think to think better, if I want to focus on more of operations excellence and leading change in organizations, instead of talking about the single aha moment, I'd rather speak about the thread and the transition and what we went through, because I'm a big believer that you never stop learning. And in everything I do, there's always new things that that open up for you. But
give me an idea of this thread that connects some of those things.
Thanks for that, Greg. And yeah, we can talk more about that as well. But every time I engage in a team to find better effective ways to lead, whether I'm leading the operation team or supporting the operations on achieving an excellence in their execution, the key thread that usually I find, it, and it's always a learning of how to go through that, is that there's never a single best solution, and you go there and you just implement it. So it's not a cookie cutter approach to implementing change in organization, regardless what change you're doing, whether operations excellence or any type of change, as a matter of fact.
Agreed.
I think to know exception, every time I work with operations to say, how can we improve your operation? The first list of things that they come up with, usually it's the list of capital projects that would need to be achieved in order to help them improve their performance. This is understandable, because usually teams that have been doing the same thing for a long time, they would assume that the only way they can improve what they're doing is by changing the technology and the tools they're working with. But to no exception, there's always, when we go through that value stream map with the team and understanding what they think are the constraints, and them understanding how we implement change, I think this is where usually the common aha moment with the teams I work with is, okay, there's a different way we can do this. I don't need millions of dollars to improve it. And I think that's the fun in what I do. There's always that type of collectively learning that there's a different way to do things. And I think that would be the highlight of my learnings through the journey.
Okay. So how do you get them to shift their thinking from, we've got to buy some new automation and equipment to improve productivity, to awakening their own self, I guess, appreciation that there might be other things that can help?
That's a great question. It's a million-dollar question, because every organization I work with, there's always that question of how can we get the team to get there. And I Like the simple answer is always start with the why, in terms of why we need to change what we're doing and why it's important. And the second, the second thing on that approach is always to listen and understand their processes. Because usually, when you go down multiple layers in the organization, everyone knows that of at least one or two things we can do differently.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't approach them to tell them what they need to do, but you approach them and say, let me understand why you do it this way today. And what do you think is there's a better way to do with that? And what's preventing you to get there? I think these are the questions that opens up that dialogue, and the team start, like, they get engaged to understand it. So always approach these discussions with humbleness and they're willing to understand versus approaching it to let them know how they can improve. I think that's the biggest thing that you'll hear a lot from me on any change leadership and how we do that.
Right. I agree with you that trying to tell people that their thinking isn't aligned isn't the right way to go because it builds resistance. On the other hand, asking questions or making observations and asking for their input. I think you're also saying that some of the operators at the front line are automatically resistant because they think you're going to tell them how to do their jobs better. And instead, what you're doing is you're asking them, what are the things that currently frustrate you or that you already see that don't seem to make any sense in the process and take extra time, et cetera. So now if we go down the lean, continuous improvement, operational excellence rabbit hole in a way, or pull that thread a little bit more, you have been trained in a lot of the tools, and I'm wondering, when did you determine that the tools themselves, they're useful, but you can't just throw everything in the toolbox at a situation? I'm wondering, because I think a lot of younger or newer practitioners think of it as being, I've got the shiny new tool, so now I'm like a hammer in search of a nail. And I just wondered, when did you determine that it isn't really about just the tools? They're important, but that's not the main thing.
That's a very relevant question, and it's actually very related to how we manage these sort of changes. And even in my current role, like, there's always, you find an operation that's implementing these practices out of common sense, and they don't know what the tools are. These are done through the leadership culture, discipline, belief of there's better ways to do things. And in these situations, we approach them to say, I know you're doing all of that. I'm just going to give you tools to help you make it easier. The reverse of that is where the team doesn't understand the value of approaching them with better systems, processes, and tools. And if you open that discussion that I'm going to train you on the tools, I'm going to give you the tools, that never gets you the outcome you need. It's less about the lean. It's less about Six Sigma. It's less about 5S. It's more about what makes sense to operate on a daily basis and to do it more efficiently. If you can have that dialogue first and the team understand in terms of there's different ways to do it, regardless of what tools you use, I think that's the first roadblock you need to cross. And after you cross it, the tools becomes a means to an end instead of becoming the end of itself. So that's the key thing that usually we focus on.
I agree. So one of the models that we covered in the session that you and I were in together a few months ago was this idea of decision-making waste. And just a quick summary for the viewers and listeners, it's the fact that the people at the front line of the business should be really focused on running it day to day. The middle manager should be focused on improving the business, and the senior level managers are focused on growing the business. But in a lot of companies, everyone kind of swarms down to run the business. And I know one of the aspects of continuous improvement and operational excellence is this idea of active management, where the supervisor starts to own the results in their team. And I just wondered, where do you see that transition start to shift away from the plant manager being the expert or the engineering manager being the expert to where the frontline operations leader becomes more of the owner of the process?
Yeah, and you and I had these discussions as well in the past as well, Greg. So just to cover a bit of what we discussed, but put it more in context of some of the real examples we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Because we talk about effectiveness in leadership. And a lot of people probably have different opinions about what effective leadership is. And usually in less mature teams and organizations, leaders see their role as, I'm going to pull up my sleeve, I'm going to help the team every time there's a problem. And don't misunderstand me, there's always a place and moment where as a leader, you need to pull up your sleeve and sit with the team to help them work through what they're trying to deal with. But a leader role in the team is a very crucial role, and it's a distinct role. It's a full-time job, and most importantly, it's a role that needs to work in active and proactive management and align and synchronize all the team effort to a better and higher outcome. And many junior leaders don't, especially in an organization where we promote people just because they were the best operator and we don't give them the tools they need to become the best leader. You see that the leaders find themselves stuck in the firefighting in the day-to-day because I'm doing what I'm best at and why I was promoted versus I'm doing my role as a leader for the team to pull them out of where we are and where we're going. The best example, usually, and it's a simple diagram. It's in a rowing boat where everyone's rowing. The leader's job is not to pull the rower and row with everyone else. The leader's job is to manage the pace and make sure that we're rowing in the same direction at the same pace. Because if that person takes a seat and starts rowing, the boat is going nowhere. And that's the realization that we try to help leaders that take on new roles of giving them the extra tools to become a leader, not just the rower.
Yeah. So you're now opening this avenue of talking about siloing and just alignment of priorities. And I like to believe in the best possible way that everyone is trying to do the best job that they can, given what they're responsible for. And the fact that they're occasionally rowing against each other or not always in alignment. And I'm just wondering, when you've noticed that between different functions, where collectively their collaboration drives operational results, but just the way that they're measured or what gets tracked or like somehow that starts to get out of alignment. Traditionally, it would be something like maintenance priorities might not be aligned with production priorities, or the sourcing team isn't always aligned. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are around this alignment of various departments and functions.
This is a very timely topic, Greg. And actually, the last 6 years of my career is just figuring out exactly that in different roles. Because organizations are poised naturally to deal with misalignment. And the reason for that is not that organizations intend to misalign their functions, but we operate in a very elusive and changing market with also changing environmental operational constraints. So usually whatever strategy and plan you start with at the beginning of the year, it's set to face challenges and changes. And in especially in larger organizations, when you have functional specialization, misalignment happens naturally. And I worked in an environment where we spend a lot of time to create the perfect plan and the best strategy to create alignment in how we measure success cross-functionally at different levels of the organization. And usually there are two different misalignment dimensions, I would say. There's misalignment cross-functionally where your sales team might have different metrics and objectives than your operational team, for example. And there's misalignment through the organizational levels where your plant manager goals might be misaligned with your maintenance manager goal in the plan. And both of these misalignments are not done by design. It's just the nature of the environment we deal with.
Right.
And what I truly believe in is actually building resilient leadership. And mm-hmm. You'll start hearing that more in the supply chain sphere lately. And because especially after the COVID situation where you can have a best integrated supply chain with the best integrated plan and measurements. And when you get a misalignment in any of your assumptions, if you don't have that resilience that the team can act and make the right decisions to steer you in the same vision that you're going towards, that's where misalignment becomes counterproductive. Yeah. So building resilience in the team is always a better, much higher value than building a perfect plan. And part of what you do and part of what you're helping us with doing, Greg, is actually building that resilience and leadership and understanding the business, the different business needs. And maybe I'll expand a bit on the sphere of control versus sphere of influence. Because as leaders, we try to build a lot of training on their sphere of control. How do you build your control in your team? How do you build accountability and actively managing your team? But at the plant manager and above more senior levels in our organization, we start talking about the sphere of influence. And that's where I think not a lot of training happens, where to enhance the tools and the skill set of the team to work more in their sphere of influence, because that's where you create resilience in dealing with misalignment and functional priority.
Yeah. So one of the things that I love the word resilience in general, even in one of our modules, which we're not focused on today, is stress resilience, because it's not about making life less stressful. It's about increasing your ability to handle the stressors in life. And the same way you said you want resilience in your supply chain, I think you're talking the same thing in your internal supply chain, like all the functions that you've chosen to have in-house to deliver results, right? And you need those alignment, but knowing that there'll always be these pressures and things that come from all directions, it's really how well the leadership team responds and helps other people respond and support them in responding to those changes. I love that. I know that I asked you this when we were like in person together. In fact, I may have asked it in front of a group, which may have been embarrassing, and I apologize for that. But one of the things that always strikes me is that you have this attitude that's quite positive. You know, I like to think I'm positive, but I know I can drift into the negative sometimes. And I haven't been around you maybe long enough to see that occasionally you could even get a little bit negative. But why do you have this, or how do you have this positive, like, let's find a way spirit? Can you talk about that?
For sure. And just on a side note, like I don't think you are personally capable to embarrass anyone, Greg. I think if you always are so eloquent and constructive in approaching any topic, and I value that as well. But if I can put a personal factor in that answer and then tell you a bit more the business,
yeah,
professional factor into it. So obviously, because of my background, I have a diverse background. I grew during war times and in countries that were dealing with a lot of big challenges. And what you learn when humanity is at its most challenging point is not to focus on the negative, it's just to focus on the hope and what you can do with what you can control. Mm-hmm. And through that background, actually, I always try to focus on the controllables, and I'm fast to look at any problems we're facing and dissect between what's really controllable, what's uncontrollable, because the uncontrollable pieces are only going to make the situation more negative, and the energy you dissipate on it is going to go to waste. And focus on the controllables where it can work the best. And the other side, from a professional perspective, and that's why I coach all my teams and leaders that I work with, and it's counter our human nature sometimes, but we need to focus less on the people factor in the problem and more on the process factor of the problem. And you'll find usually people's first reaction is always about this department didn't do what they need to do, and so didn't do what they need to do. And I try to elevate my team and the teams I work with to go beyond that. Because if the first time you hit a problem, your first reaction is going to be who didn't do their job. But after that, if we assume everyone is coming to work to do their jobs at the best they can do, let's focus on the process and what prevented them. And that's the energy of focus on the controllable. Because you're not going to change people, you're going to change process. And by focus on the processes, actually, it gets everyone on a whole new level and gets everyone in a positive way where we're collaborating to solve versus we're blaming each other just to get down further in the problem.
Yeah. So, by the way, we're talking with William El-Khoury from IPEX, our global actual producer of plastic pipe and infrastructure projects. In disclosure, we've done frontline leadership for IPEX. We're working on some site leader training, and William and I were in a session together a few months ago as we're designing that new site leader project. One thing, William, that I'd be interested in is if you were coaching somebody younger or newer in their career, I'm wondering what advice that you'd give them. I know you're not necessarily telling people what to do, but if someone said, what do you think I should do? What would you say they should really focus on earlier in their career as they think about advancing into their career?
I think we touched a bit on a few aspects of these coaching advices, Greg, but maybe I'll link them together and put them in a summary in answering this question. Because like what we discussed just earlier in this meeting is that usually the junior leaders, when they get promoted, a lot of them are promoted because of their attitude and what they've done in their previous role, but few of them are giving the tools and equipment to lead teams. And especially if you're leader of a team, that's a very distinct role in the team, and it's a full-time job of the team. And the team needs a leader at any point, whether it's the former leader or someone else, but they need someone to coordinate and execute what they need to do. So first and foremost, a leader needs to be able to step away from the daily activities and build resilience in their group. And by resilience, I'm talking about active and proactive management and thinking beyond just the daily firefight. And early in our careers, including myself, usually the first few years, you're just trying to maximize output by just putting more effort into it versus streamlining the organization and build strength in your team. So any leader of teams with people reporting to them, their priority should always be how do I build strength where the team doesn't need me in the execution, they need me in the direction and the collaboration. And also investing time on their sphere of influence and understanding their other or functions, priorities are and what where these conflicts happen and how can we resolve them. As a leader, if you present your value to the organization that way, you'll have much further future value in where you can go through your career.
I love how you're weaving in this idea of value. Arnold Schwarzenegger, who people of course recognize as a bodybuilder, award winner, previous governor of California, he wrote a book and it's called Be Useful. And he talks about having difficulty as he grew up, but this idea of being of value to others is really what you're saying is every job has a functional element, which is usually to deliver some sort of a result or outcome. But there's sort of this meta need at the higher level, which is just to be of value and help other people be successful. So I think really what I'm taking from you is recognize that the team needs you to help them become more resilient, more successful. If you're seen as this catalyst when added to a team environment, you raise up performance and the value added of that team. Your runway is almost unlimited because when you know those things, just like you've done in your career, you become transferable into other situations and you can use a very similar playbook, right? As opposed to just becoming an expert in one narrow area. So I love that idea. One of the areas that that we focus on, and we've been working with you, is this idea of leadership development. And of course, your focus right now, although it sounds like it's a lot about leadership development, but it's also about operational excellence. And I've been trying to figure out how do you take the soft skills of leadership and put it with the operational excellence skills, because you know that you can be OpEx centered. Sometimes you can become almost robotic in the way that you interact with people around tasks and data. But then there's the soft skills. And I'm just wondering whether you've got any insights into how those two things come together. I'm really just looking for tips on how to make leadership training and development maybe more effective and actually having an impact on operational performance. I just wondered if you have thoughts on the soft skills versus the operational excellence area.
Yeah, this weaves a bit in our in the last question, Greg, because what we just discussed is that leadership is not about how good of an operator you are, whether you're an operator leadership or any other function, as a matter of fact, but it's more about building strong teams to deliver business outcome. So the technical skill set for a leader, you probably will relate to that. So, but the more people get into senior roles in the organization, the percentage of the value of the technical know-how becomes much less, has less weight than the percentage of value of understanding the soft skills of leading through organizations. And truly, the moment you take a leader role in at any level, you're changing your hat. You're not anymore the functional leader. You become a business leader. And I think the true aha moment for any leader, and that's where I went through when in my junior year, where the organization doesn't need me to be the best functional leader. They need me to be the best business leader, especially if looking at the resiliency needed to deal with the world that we deal with today. Because we don't need the best person who can build an Excel file or the best person who can run a production line at a leadership or at the helm of any large team. We need someone who understands the business needs, understand the constraints they're dealing with, and come with solutions of how can we deal with the problems we have. So I answered the question by actually dissociating the technical from the soft skills, but I put much more weight right now in everything I do and building strong leaders and strong teams versus
Perfect.
Training them on the tools of what they need to do.
I can see that tie in. Even when we ask people to think about the most effective manager or leader that they've worked for, who they've worked for, we build two lists. We build the task side. We'll hear things like knowledgeable, competent, hard worker, good problem solver. But then the list on the soft skills side around good coach, teacher, open-minded, you know, supportive, it's all these things. And usually that list is twice as long as the task. But I think what you're really bringing up for people is initially in your career, you probably focused a lot on the tasks. And really what you'll distinguish or what will distinguish you is really this idea of being more people-centered. Before we wrap up, I just wondered, I know you had thought about our interview. Did you have any, you've already shared so much wisdom. Do you have anything else that you want to share as we wrap up?
I think we covered a lot of stuff, but just because we're in an environment today, we're dealing with global warming, we're dealing with hurricanes that we've never experienced before, we're dealing with global challenges. I think that the only thing that I will underline again is that the focus for any leader in building strength in their team should be on resilience. And you'll hear that more and more. And you quoted Arnold Schwarzenegger, but now there's a quote I use a lot with my team. It's a Mike Tyson quote, one of the least you want to probably refer to in a business environment. But I love it because he said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Punched in the face, yeah.
But that's a true quote that we're saying, well, you need to start with a plan, but we need to have the resilience in our team. And I can be with you in everyday decision-making. This is the empowerment we need to build in our team where they need to make decisions on their own without consulting with you every day. So if you can build that in your team, that's actually what brings the strength and the competitiveness you need to steer in the future environment we're working in today.
It's probably a great tip, though, for people in their families as well, is that what people really need is resiliency, the ability to bounce back from all the challenges that happen in every person's life. So, William, I just wanted to say thank you. Again, our guest today is William Elkhoury from IPEX. And, of course, you can reach IPEX, or if you want to check out IPEX as a company, you can visit IPEXNA.com. And for William Elkhoury, you can obviously look him up on LinkedIn. William, thank you so much for being on the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast.
Thanks a lot, Greg, for having me. And it's always a pleasure to have these chats with you.
All right, good stuff. Well, again, thank you for listening to the podcast or viewing it. The best thing you can do is, of course, tell someone else about it and share it. And then, of course, like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. Now, as you heard in the discussion with William, we do all sorts of leadership development and training, and we're always looking for advanced companies to partner with to help them on their journey. And of course, you can check out everything that we do at our website, uniquedevelopment.com. For now, I'll just say, go forward, put some of these ideas into practice, and make the world and your company a better place.